You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
I received a piece from the desk of Russell Silverstone, who's a strategist at 91 in London, and the headline is Macroscope, Time to Buy Gilts. It says Russell Silverstone argues that with inflation about to hit target, the Bank of England is soon to embark on an easing cycle, and the economy is recovering, and it's about time that the so-called moron premium was consigned to the history books. Russell is with me, as I said. I've never heard the word moron in a strategist's piece of analysis, Russell. It's not your word, it's somebody else's, but you've used it. Tell us about it, please.
No, absolutely. Hi there, Lindsay. So this was if you've been in markets as long as I have, there's always a wagger that comes up with a great phrase. And this was somebody on the sell side of the bank that came up with the phrase, the moron premium, which sort of reflected the higher rates the UK had to pay over the ill-fated Liz Truss's premiership. And that sort of premium it's come down, but it's still in the market. And what I'm sort of arguing is that actually, notwithstanding they slightly disappointing data, inflation's falling in the UK, and nobody is going to make these Truss's mistakes again. So that sort of premium that the UK has to pay over other markets should subside over the coming months.
Yes, they should. I mean, that was an extraordinary time, wasn't it, with the very brief Chancellor of the Exchequer and Liz Truss are getting together and delivering this extraordinary policy, but that didn't last very long. If we come back to basics and we have our feet firmly on the ground, we've got to say a few things. When I saw your piece, I sort of scribbled a few things down, and I thought, okay, interest rates are poised to fall. When, we don't know, and by how much, we don't know. Inflation much lower. It's gone from 11.1% to the recent print of 2.3%, which is an astonishing achievement. I think, whether it be the government or whether it be the Bank of England or just lack of demand in the economy, I don't know. But 2.3% it is, 0.3% away from the government target. And the other thing, of course, which is a bit of a wild card, politics, because there's an election coming up. Where do you want to start, Russell?
Let's start with inflation, shall we? So yesterday's number, 2.3%, that's lower than the US at a headline level, and it's lower than the Eurozone at a headline level. So that's encouraging. That's all about energy prices. So we have something called an energy price cap, which is implemented by the energy regulator Ofgem, and it's slow moving. So whereas other markets, other countries see their energy prices move much more dynamically, ours go up slowly, and then they come down sort of slowly. So what we reflect is, you know, that higher rate reflected Ofgem price cap. The lower rate was interesting, reflects the opposite of that. You know, what goes up must come down. So yeah, inflation is lower. Today's number in particular actually was disappointing in terms of underlying inflation, service sector inflation. And just to put some numbers on this, it sort of thinks about sort of recreation and cultural services. So not always what's in cultural services, theatre, cinema, concerts, that sort of thing, probably Taylor Swift tickets, actually. But cultural services are up 4.4% on the month. I mean, that's a huge increase. But there's another thing going on here in the UK. We've implemented the National Living Wage, and that was implemented in April. So, you know, a lot of service sector industries that employ, you know, people on relatively low salaries have had to sort of push those through to the consumers. So it's slightly disappointing. But big picture, you're exactly right. You know, we've gone up a long way in inflation. We've come down a long way in inflation. And that means with interest rates where they are, 5.25%, the sort of real rate we have to pay in our economy is extremely high. And ultimately, the Bank of England wants to make that adjustment and start getting rates down. And yet our bond market still reflects this sort of premium that we sort of earn over that trust premiership. And, you know, whether you think in absolute terms yields need to fall or relative to other markets, you know, gilts look to us to be quite compelling value.
Yes, and we'll get to the technicality of which end of the curve you invest in when it comes to gilts. But it seems to me that any sell-off like we saw after the 2.3% inflation print is an opportunity to buy, because the moron premium, as that wag called it and that you've adopted, is quite honestly going to be consigned to the scrap heap eventually.
Well, I think so. And you mentioned politics, and I think one thing that is very clear, again, you know, if you've done this as long as I have, when a sort of a mistake has been made, people assume it's going to be made again fairly soon. So it's like a sort of a recency bias we all have. Think of COVID. obviously we're all still a little bit paranoid about it, but the chances of a global pandemic over the next 10 years, I'm no scientist, but I imagine it's pretty small. And it's the same here sort of fiscally in terms of everyone's worried that, an incoming administration is going to open the fiscal floodgates. I would argue it's completely the opposite. Having seen what can happen to government borrowing costs when you get a completely irresponsible budget, the objective is the right one, of course, which is get growth up, but not through unfunded tax cuts. It isn't going to happen. And therefore, if the moron, so-called moron premium reflects that fear, I would argue it's far less likely than it was before Truss became PM. I think noise notwithstanding in markets, it does look compelling. And I would say one other thing on this noise. Again, I've done this sort of 41 or 42 years, I think it is.
Yeah.
There's a real difference between market time and economic time. And by that, I mean, markets react. They have bonkers one day, they're euphoric the next. But actually, economies sort of evolve over the medium term. And so, the reaction we're seeing today is, oh my goodness, inflation's missed by 0.2%. It's sort of actually, in economic terms and economic time, it's just noise. But markets, of course, do what markets do. And so, I think the view is still absolutely valid. Big picture, step back from the noise. Inflation's coming down and actually growth is pretty low in the UK. And that makes gilts compelling value.
Yeah. Well said. Markets, of course, are anticipatory, but there's also time frames in that anticipation. So short term, they say, oh, my goodness, we're short term jobbers of the market and we've got to sell gilts, the yield going up, etc. But long term, I think the long term investors will be sitting around. This is my view, not 91's. They will be looking at and saying, let's build a long term position on any rise in the gilt rates and rise in the gilt bond. So you say one thing. You say, and I'm quoting you here, if growth is flat and inflation is likely to settle near 2%, why is the UK government having to borrow 10-year money at 4.15%? You go on to say, we would look to answer this question through an estimate of fair value. Over to you on this one, please, Russell.
Yeah, no, sure. So any market has a modelled sort of fair value, which is given, inputs of X and Y, what should an equity be worth? And in this particular case, all we do is say, OK, the long term growth rate of the UK is around about 1%. Inflation, we think, will settle close to 2%. So that gives a sum of 3%. And then, you've still got a difference of around, well, today it's more like 70 basis points, 0.7% away from that sort of fair value because, gilts and the vast majority of government bonds are risk-free. So there might be a bit of a premium in there. But we come up with a sort of fair value. And I would warn fair value, the half-life, i.e. the time it takes for a market to reach sort of fair value can be measured in years. But nonetheless, all of our models say as long as growth trends around about 1% and inflation settles around about 2%, yields should be much, much lower than they are. And that's really what's driving this sort of argument. And the counter argument is, something has changed post-COVID. We're in a higher inflation world. I personally don't believe that. I don't think what has changed. I don't think anything has. And growth, as I say, notwithstanding last quarter's number, which was quite strong. Again, it's just noise. With growth around 1%, yields should be lower. So it's an opportunity, in my view.
Yes. And what does that mean for the 91 strategy? Are you increasing your gilt position?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one thing I would say, rather sadly for the UK, we are a bit of a, in a global context now, gilts are a bit of a niche market. But nonetheless, absolutely, we've been buying them, we're looking to buy them and sort of build a position. But in a global context, and if you look at a government bond index, gilts are only a small part of that. So I don't want to use the word niche, I just have, but it's a fairly, gilts are a fairly specialist market. But the same applies to the US, where yields are actually slightly higher. Inflation's coming down there, growth will settle at a higher rate. But nonetheless, the markets generally have this idea that when this is all over, when the whole COVID period's over, when inflation sort of settles back towards target, the assumption in the markets, generally in bond markets, is that interest rates settle at a much higher level than they did before COVID. And I think, gilts are one manifestation of that, but treasuries, US treasuries, and in fact, Eurozone bonds are another manifestation of that. So I think the big view is that bonds do offer some reasonable value. But in terms of ranking, gilts are the ones that shine above all the others.
Russell, thank you so much for your insight. Russell Silverstone is a strategist at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.